Welcome to the CityDAO podcast. I'm your host, Eric Gilbert Williams. CityDAO is exploring decentralized asset ownership on chain, starting with a simple piece of land purchased in Wyoming during 2021. Each parcel of land becomes an NFT that can be owned collectively by the DAO or by individuals, just like you and me. CityDAO is a DAO. In other words, it's a decentralized autonomous organization, meaning that land governance, treasury, and other things, including this show you're listening to right now, are all managed by the community. Check out the FAQ at citydao.io to learn more, or check out the CityDAO Discord channel to get all the latest updates. Now let's get started with the show. As you all know, CityDAO is an experiment into exactly as the name suggests, all things related to the decentralized governance of a city. Now, a city has a lot of moving parts, and even the definition of what a city is can sometimes be varying in its definition and its answers, depending on who you're speaking with and what the context happens to be in that particular discussion. So this really is an exploration, a quest, if you will, into this territory of decentralized land governance. And in many ways, I view CityDAO citizens as pioneers, charting out that territory for everyone's benefit. And for our own benefit, because we're curious explorers. So being an open and collaborative community in nature, CityDAO is excited to be engaging in discussions with influential people of all walks of life, including politicians. And today, we have the pleasure of speaking with the executive director of Venture Miami, Eric Gavin. Now, Eric, love your name. We got two Erics on the show today. This is awesome.
Ooh, Eric.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Very wonderful. Nice to be on the show. Definitely have heard a lot of great things and happy to be here and share some experience that hopefully can give some good thought to the subject matter and also hopefully have some thrilling conversation about what's going on in this space.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a new project, and most people that are in it are coming from such a wide variety of walks of life, from, you know, just coming out of graduating university to professional lobbyists in politics to, you know, architects. It just kind of really covers the broad spectrum. And a lot of us, we've never built a city before. None of us have done that. I mean, who couldn't say that they did? So there's a lot of territory here we want to cover and explore. How did you hear about CityDAO in the first place? I never asked you that before.
Yeah, so I heard about CityDAO through my own research, actually. So I've been working on right now seeing what options we can do to kind of innovate on top of Miami Coin or beyond Miami Coin to figure out what's going to be most helpful for citizens. And a DAO immediately came to my mind, even before coming into this position, which I know we'll go into my background. I've been in this position for about a month and a half, almost 2 months now. And I was looking into seeing how DAOs could potentially affect our decision-making, both internally in the government and also in accordance with the community, kind of how people normally think about how DAOs are leveraged. And in that research, I came across CityDAO and I was like, oh, this is a wonderful project. So looked into it a little bit more, saw what kind of structure you guys had set up and noticed that there's a lot more of a connection at the state level as opposed to, you know, the local level that I'm operating at within the city itself. So it made me think a little bit bigger about what needs to happen in order to get more things aligned for us to start being innovative at the city level, but then also maybe some inroads that can happen locally that we can either create for a DAO or any kind of like organizational structure that can be helpful for changing and affecting innovation in our community.
Well, congrats on the new job. That sounds like a pretty exciting opportunity to be diving in at a city level in the crypto world. How did you come about? Like, what were you doing before?
So what I was actually doing before was working kind of in civic tech with a couple of non-for-profits. First, helping out organizations learn how to leverage technology, and then also building technology to have people be better connected to either other communities that were doing very similar things or trying to help figure out how we could build internal tools that can help them work more effectively. So I was at the Center for Black Innovation before this. And then previous to that, I was working at a tech company that did POS systems for restaurants. So a lot of customer interaction, but then also at the same time, designing and helping to manage the rollout of a product that was on the back end of restaurants. So I moved from that and tried to do a little bit more with technology that I felt was more impactful to this position now, where I was essentially called upon by the mayor to move into this position because of my work in the community, what things I was doing, the advocacy that I was doing in the community and trying to work with people to say, hey, Miami's in a good place, but we have a lot more to do. And they gave me the opportunity to do more, which I'm extremely excited about. And we have a lot that we have planned for this year.
Yeah. And you know, the jump from private sector to public, I'd imagine is a, you know, it's a big jump mentally and in a lot of ways, I'd imagine. What are sort of the big things that you've been working on just, you know, personally to climatize into that political landscape?
talking is the biggest. Before, normally my actions, I could do things and people would say, hey, this is really great. I'm behind this. This makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't have to say that much in order to actually do those things. I did advocacy, but most of my advocacy was through collaboration and working with people. Now, I have to say a lot more before I follow through with the action that I'm able to do. Because as you know, more than and everybody in this space knows, when you're building something, it takes time. Even when you're making small iterations and you're doing MVPs to move really quickly, those things still take at least a month or 2 months. So, but people want to know what's happening now and what you're doing now and how you're operating now and shifting from this kind of introverted feel to like doing things and then showing afterwards to, you know, speaking on the things that I'm going to do and doing the things and then showing how I'm following through with it is a little bit of a new dynamic for me that I'm actually really starting to enjoy. It's nice having conversations with people, being much, much more open so that I can take in feedback and be collaborative with people as I'm moving forward. And I've enjoyed the process like significantly. And then I say the only other second thing is the government, even though I'm not necessarily operating in a traditional city role or capacity, there are still aspects of it that I'm learning to deal with. So even very, very simple things that I thought, hey, we're going to get this thing done and we're going to move forward and everything's going to be fine, is still very much an uphill battle sometimes in order to help people understand why this thing is necessary, why it's needed. Like, why do we need Calendly on our team? Well, that's a huge conversation. And so you're like, well, maybe it's potentially a security concern. I'm like, yes, it might be. But also at the same time, it would increase productivity for us, maybe like by factors of 20 and 30%. It's a little bit of a back and forth, and sometimes taking concessions to say it's not best to always choose the most efficient route, but more so the effective route with people to have collaborative conversations and make sure everybody's on board and trust what we're doing moving forward, since we're such a new entity within the city.
You know, what we're experiencing right now, to me, is such a revolution. It's such a mind. It's just a mind-blowing experience. Like when I got into crypto and Bitcoin world, let's say early 2017, whatever it was, you know, the first thing I did, and I have a background in construction, the first thing I did was completely renovate my garage, upgrade the electrical, you know, rip out holes up in the roof, put some, you know, ventilation going through and stuff the thing filled with ASICs and start, you know, mining some Bitcoin. And my biggest fears were, one of the biggest things in my mind was, how do I hide this from the city? How do I make sure that I don't get my house raided for some sort of a grow up mistake? And how do I explain this to the electrical company? And how do I process the accounts in my bank? And of course, the banking in Canada is very different than the United States. And any quick look at what, you know, Trudeau just did, without getting into politics here on purpose, I'm just saying, you know, a Canadian's bank account specifically related to crypto is absolutely no longer secure at all. So, and these were the fears that I had in 2017 and getting into mining. So for me, going into mining and going into crypto in this whole world was a, wow, I have to hide this from the city. You know, the city is anti-Bitcoin and there's a war clashing. And then, you know, in China, it's completely banned. And India, you know, is now maybe bringing it back in some sort of degree, which is a whole different conversation. But now we're in this spot with CityDAO where we're trying to integrate the concept of cryptocurrency, of Web3, with the city. And here we are, you know, you and I chatting collaboratively about how do we make the world a better place. And that's really what this is supposed to be about. So to me, this is just an amazing moment. I feel really grateful for it.
It is a watershed moment, honestly. It's one of those moments where you look back and you start to notice, like, that's where that shift was started to happen at, right? I remember being, you know, getting my first Bitcoin in 2012. I was a college student and I had my engineer friend who, he was super into the dark web, and he was like, hey man, like, there's this new currency, it's called Bitcoin. And I was like, I don't know, but I'll try, because I'm a very experimental person. So I was like, I love technology and I would like to see what new things exist. And it was first when you had to do everything through like the arduous process of just using hash numbers and personal IDs in order to make these trades happen. And going through that process, I was finding out, man, I really like this. I really enjoy this. But this is also very, very stressful going through this process. Looking at that moment where we're at now, where I'm having public conversations with people and talking about how we make the experience more palatable for the everyday user is mind-blowing to me. And it lets me know that we're on the right track, that even though you were in your garage at one point hiding all of this technology from your local government, maybe even larger overarching government, to now where you're having open conversations about how do we leverage and use this for people's benefit, it lets me know that people are still in the same place where they're like, I don't know what this means for me, but they're more open to the idea of trying. And that's a huge shift And perspective, being able to say, I'm willing to try to see if this is something that we can do. And of course, you can't just throw things at the wall. It's not a shotgun approach, but being willing to try and to iterate on solutions is, I think, should be the norm for cities to start to do in order to make sure that they're effectively serving their citizens. So I'm not saying every city needs to be a startup. I'm not going to go to that route. But if they're seeing that innovation works in different ways for the citizens, I don't see why you wouldn't want to push for that. Standing on our laurels, staying with tradition, is only going to be able to do so much.
And so you got into Bitcoin when you were, I guess it was 2012, like you said, and you were in, yep. You're in school there, I think.
Yeah, I was at the University of Michigan, and I was in my junior year. This was. And during my junior year, like moving into my sophomore year, I started to do just a little bit. I think at that time it was 300 around that time. And it had a little like it was the year I know for a fact that it did a huge spike and crash, which I mean feels like every year now, but every month. It was one of those times where it happened just like once that year or twice that year. And when it happened in that way, it freaked me out a lot. But at the same time, it made me very excited about what the space could actually do. And that's when I got kind of a taste of trying to leverage technology as a non-tech person, which was like revolutionary to me because I thought, oh man, I have to take all these CS classes or be a data analyst or, you know, go into engineering in some sort. I thought that I needed to have like this full wealth of knowledge and technology to even be able to try to be in the space. And that wasn't the case. He said, you just need to do this. And you set yourself up and you watch the market to the best of your ability and you do what you can. And I was like, okay, I tried this. And I was like, okay, I'm not doing so bad. And then I made some bad trades and that didn't go well. And then I made some good ones. And so it was a learning process. And I think that's what it's not going to happen in the same way. We're past that point, but I want people to feel that, have that same feeling. Like I'm not completely technical, but I can get into this space and find some benefit, success, or use case for me that can benefit my life in some form or fashion.
And then this led you down this road of doing public sector work. And you, of course, now you're with the city and you're leading the Venture Miami project. And yes. I'd be curious to hear in your own words, what is Venture Miami all about?
Venture Miami was an initiative started by Mayor Suarez last year. And it has turned into kind of a full organization within the city that is both growing the tech and innovation ecosystem and focused on economic development through that. So we, all these companies that are coming down that everybody hears in the news about Miami, all of that is true, and all of that mainly goes through our office to help people relocate their offices, relocate their families, and figure out where they live in Miami to set up properly. But also, in addition to that, we don't only focus on just relocating people, we focus on trying to strengthen our local community that already exists here. So technology, talent, and education are the main ways that we focus on doing that. So through technology like Miami Coin and moving more broadly into smart city types of technology, we're trying to strengthen the way that our government responds and or improve the processes that the government has in order to better serve our community. Moving into education, so education not only for the community so that they can better understand how they can leverage technology. So most of it is Web3, but technology more generally, if they're a small business, how can they leverage technology to better serve their customers and to grow or at least stay sustainable during very, very, I would say, very, very dynamic periods of time in the market that exists, like the pandemic that just happened. But also educating our local politicians to say, hey, this is how you can leverage and use innovation, more specifically leverage and use blockchain, Web3 technology to be able to better serve your constituents and or just better understand it so that you can know what's happening around you, because the world is going to continue to push in this direction. You need to know what's going on. Finally, looking into the talent piece, Miami has always had talent, but the connection between talent that exists and the employers who would employ them has been a large gap. And so trying to close that gap and make sure that the talent that exists here doesn't leave, stays here and continues to both invigorate the community and invigorate the ecosystem, but also be hired so that they can live here is really, really important. So we try to level all three of those in order to make sure that we're serving our citizens in the best way that we can.
And how many people are on your team right now with Venture Miami?
Five. So we have two business dev people, we have strategic engagement, we have social media, and then we have myself. Yeah.
Right on. And then they've been around, I suppose, for a little bit. And now you're the new leader that's brought in. And now you're working together and getting to know each other and starting to push forward on some of these initiatives together.
Yeah. So, I mean, previous to this, there was the initiative was a mix of academics and people from academic institutions that came together that were not in the government completely. They were not in the city of Miami completely as employees, but operated kind of in the pseudo manner, helping to guide the project up into this point where they appointed me as executive director. And then from there, there were two people who had previously worked, my lead for strategic engagement, Kelly Montoya, and then my lead for business development, Kevin Ruiz, who had been working with the city, but have fully transitioned into the team. And then I brought in a couple more people to round out where we're at. And then I'm trying to stay lean now. So try to stay lean, work effectively, leverage technology in the best way that we can to push forward our initiatives. And then if it makes sense, grow from there, if it makes sense to do more. But there's some other positions that I have recently put out for a community lead, a developer. These are contract positions that are going to focus specifically on growing the ecosystem around Miami Coin, because it's a little bit more complex than what people had originally thought it was going to be, or at least that's how I envision it. So there's some assistance that needs to happen there, but they will be working alongside the team as opposed to doing all of this, the breadth of what the team actually needs to do.
Gotcha. And you know, when we look at regions in the United States, let's say the city of Miami or you know, the city of New York or the state of Wyoming, there's certain regions that have pushed forward and have more interest in, let's say, the Web3 world than other regions. And I'm curious, when did the city of Miami first really start to look at Web3 and crypto in a more serious way and want to get involved? How long has that been developing?
So if anybody has heard of the tweet heard around the world, which Mayor Francis Suarez kind of put out to say, how can I help to investors that were looking to come to the city of Miami that were moving away from SF and then eventually from New York as well, that sparked a lot of the movement of investors to come down here. And then on top of that, there started to be a lot of interest at the exact same time around Web3 and blockchain technology, which, you know, our city had open arms for. Said, hey, please come down here, leverage the connections, the good energy in the city, the strong community that exists in the city, and help it grow. So crypto and Web3 has been our strongest industry moving from last year into this year. We've had the most blockchain investments, if I remember correctly, out of any other city in the nation. So that kind of organically came about because of the types of both community leaders that we have down here that embrace of what crypto and blockchain technology has to offer, a mix of the mayor being a strong catalyst for those efforts because of his openness to what cryptocurrency actually could be leveraged and used for, and more largely what Web3 and blockchain technology can be used for. And then the strong investment pool that has started to come down here that has also had faith in what blockchain and cryptocurrency technology has. This kind of culminated together in founders saying, I should go there. I should make that a place that I actually want to be, because it's a place that I know that I can find success at and get investment from. And we've seen a lot of success stories from different smaller niche areas in blockchain to, you know, more large, that we're a blockchain, we are our own blockchain company, and we want to call Miami our home. You know, for instance, Algorand is sponsoring what is Miami Tech Month in April. So you could just see the cryptocurrencies in different types of blockchain companies doubling down on what Miami actually is. And it's, I had a question posed to me, like, why is it that we need to be so location specific when we're talking about blockchain? It's supposed to be decentralized. It's supposed to be anywhere, which that's very, very true. But when you think about how communities are formed and how people come together in order to embrace either interest or subject matter that they want to work around, those are formed in person. And so there has to still be, we're people. So there still has to be some focus in a local area for people to see people face to face and commune around these types of ideas and grow together in that way.
And Miami's been considered a hub for, let's say, crypto and Web3 for a little while. And it'd be interesting just to share with listeners from your perspective why that is. You know, I know there's an FTX sponsorship of like $200 million, if I remember that correctly. There was XBTO, the Jersey sponsorship. There was eToro presence. There's obviously the Bitcoin conference. I heard some discussion about some sort of talks that the city was in with nuclear power to provide some, you know, cheap energy for miners. I don't really know much about that, but I'd love to hear in your own words, why do you feel that Miami is a hub for the Web3 world?
So it's kind of like, I think the best way to put it is it's kind of, it becomes the hub of the Web3 world because we say that it is. just like in the sense that we give value.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's, you know, Bitcoin has value because we give it value because we want it to have value. Miami is a place that people want to be, want Web3 to be the center of everything. And in Miami, because we say that it is. I can get into how the Bitcoin conference was a catalyst, how the mayor was a catalyst through his tweet, how the Bitcoin conference was a catalyst on top of that, how Miami reacted as fast as it did to the growth and changes in Web3. And that when people came down here to vacation, we took advantage of that to say, you don't need a vacation here. You could live here and you can still get work here. You can get things done here. Look at all the people who are willing to invest in the companies that you work in. At. Look at the deal flow that you can still have by being down here in Miami. That has always been there, but it started to become there even more so because we had people of prominent status, including the mayor and Keith Robois and other people like him as investors, say, I think Miami is a place that I actually want to be. I'm going to give it a shot. And they gave it a shot. And it, like you just said, it, Eric, it became a self-fulfilling prophecy where people said, I gave it a shot and it works for me because I want it to work for me. Yes, we can talk about, you know, the sunny weather and the state income tax. We can have those discussions. We can even talk about more local programs where businesses can come in and they can have some of their employee costs cut if they bring enough employees down or if they hire enough within the city of Miami. Those things exist. But that's not the main reason why people want to come down here. They want to come down here because they feel the community has so much optimism and belief in what we're doing as a city through Web3, blockchain technology, and the like. And I can only expect that grows through the different industries that exist within the startup ecosystem and community more generally.
So I'd love to talk about DAOs, but just before we go into that, just a little bit about Miami Coin. If you could give us a summary of, you know, where Miami Coin is right now. I mean, listeners, I'm making a bit of an assumption that listeners here know a bit of the background about Miami Coin, but where is the project at right now? I mean, you know, I guess I'll put a little summary for the benefit of everyone listening. You know, obviously there's a coin out called Miami Coin, and there's a 30% of the, if I remember correctly, the staking rewards coming from the miners go towards the city, towards city initiatives. And then there's a aspect of community involvement. There's an initiative there. You know, there was a lot of energy at the beginning. Right now, there's a bit of a dip, you could say. And there's a lot of new initiatives, I think, that you're exploring on what could the coin do? Where could it go? What's next for it? And I'd love to hear your perspective coming into this role only 1.5 months. What's going on with Miami Coin? And if I said anything wrong there, please correct me.
No. I think you have it spot on. We are currently right now, and this is something that I definitely wanted to make clear, and I have been trying to do so as I've moved into this position. There, Miami Coin is a new type of cryptocurrency because of what it's focusing on. In particular, right? It's easy to get caught up in the conversation about price, right? We can sit here and have a discussion about where the price is at opposed to where its height was at a couple months ago and where it started at. We can have that conversation. And if you look at the numbers, you might say, oh, it doesn't look like it's doing extremely well. But to really put things in perspective, you have to start thinking about the currency apart from its price and more so as a store for what is going to be used for, its utility. So instead of just thinking of it as a store of value, like how we think of Bitcoin, we have to start thinking about it in terms of, okay, what am I going to use this coin for, this token for, and how am I going to leverage it to benefit my life as I move forward? So yes, if we try to treat it like a dollar, this is a problem because then you'll say, oh, I can't buy as much stuff with this because it is of lower value. But if it started to shift from just simply being thought of as a store of value compared to a dollar, as it's being thought of right now, in terms of how can I economically use this? How can I use this for a social benefit? How can the community leverage this in order to give access to things that are not being given access to, or greater access to things that are not being given access to? Then we can start to have a little bit of a different conversation. So the shift starts to become, okay, I have fully identified that Miami is going to be used for, let's say, one of the use cases that we have been talking a lot about has been around energy usage or food assistance, or upskilling when people are learning new skills through either government programs or programs that are recognized by local official entities. When people are going through those processes, if they're able to acquire Miami Coin by virtue of finishing those programs, by being energy efficient and treating of environmental benefit to the city, by asking for when they ask for food assistance, being able to be given their version or equivalent of food assistance through a token, so they don't have to physically go to any place at all. They just have to wake up and see it in their wallet. That shifts the dynamic in how we think about the token. So yes, if I just simply use it for an exact exchange in fiat, yeah, we have a conversation that we have to discuss in terms of how the price is. But if I tell you, you only need to have 100 Miami coin in order to have a discount at this merchant, it doesn't really matter what the price is. It matters how much Miami coin you have, right? It matters how much it is to buy it. But again, if I start creating ways that you can not have to buy it, but you can just acquire it by virtue of being a great, I don't want to say a good or bad citizen, because that's not a really good way to think about it, but being a citizen in Miami by virtue of living in Miami, then you start to get away from the price itself. You start to look at, what social benefit am I gaining by leveraging this token in the way that I'm carrying on my life? So that's the experiment that we're in right now. We're looking at different use cases that allows for us to start leveraging Miami Coin beyond just a simple price in terms of how we transact it, like dollars, and how we can start leveraging and using it for a social benefit. There will still be some utility economically in terms of how we can use it in that way. But we have to think a little bit more broadly in that sense, because right now, Miami Coin is down. When we start using utility and it starts growing and it potentially gets put on other exchanges, who's to say that the price wouldn't go up? Now, but the problem is that if the price goes up, and let's say it goes up to XYZ amount over a dollar, then I have a different problem, because now there's huge volatility and now people can't treat it like a regular currency, just like the standard Bitcoin problem, where if I buy a pizza today, is it worth what I bought it for tomorrow? This exact same problem, just we're not talking about such a high value. So this is the problem that we have to, in the challenge, I should say challenge, because I see it as a really interesting challenge that I'm really excited about. This is the challenge that we have to overcome as the city in order to understand how we get people to start talking about its utility and how we're going to use it, as opposed to simply its price, right? And that's not to say that we shouldn't talk about the price at all. It is going to continue to be a point of conversation, because this is a cryptocurrency. So let's all be real about that, and we don't need to get away from this point. But thinking about it more broadly, you start to weigh how much I should care about the price to how much it's going to actually be used. So it's a balancing game that needs to start to happen.
And is that to suggest that perhaps of the 30% rewards that are kept for the city, that those rewards are going to be sent back to people and not just sort of arbitrarily put into the city's bank account for its own use on existing initiatives?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that is the goal and purpose. So right now, I'm currently in the process of working with people both internally and externally to figure out what that looks like. Does it happen in waves? Do we actually start having conversations with people about how much it should be based on where they're at in the city or what their income level is or what have you? So one that gets into, you know, very political realm that I like to stay out of. I would very much like for, you know, if the mayor says that we're going to do a form of Bitcoin dividend or something akin to that, because I don't want to necessarily call it that, but something akin to that, then I would like to just simply focus on the mechanics of how that goes out and benefits everyone in the exact same way, so that everybody benefits from it just by virtue of being a citizen of Miami. So that's my challenge. That's my task. I want to stay away from the political aspects of it and focus on, okay, we want to do this. How do we make sure that people benefit from this in the way that we expect them to benefit from it in? And how do we make sure that the treasury that we are building up, which is why I was doing my research on DAOs originally, continues to stay, the principle stays, so that we can do this over time and for years to come, and potentially, if not offset or completely replace other mechanisms for which we were paying for things originally. If this one day becomes, you know, $1 billion treasury, it can offset quite a few things. But in order to do that, we have to leverage the money and how we disperse it and how we utilize it in a way that's going to make sure that it continues to pay back into itself to be able to do some of these larger calls that we would expect or like for it to do.
One thing I heard Mayor Suarez talk about was the possibility of maybe a Bitcoin wallet being presented to citizens and maybe some sort of an airdrop, maybe a la El Salvador style, you know, I don't know. But is there any comments on that right now, or is that more just a discussion concept at the moment?
I don't have any additional comments beyond saying the point that it's necessary to have to onboard citizens in a way that is not going to require them to do a whole bunch of mechanical work like we had to when we were first starting out. if we want people to actually start to leverage and use this in a way that they feel comfortable and confident in, we have to make sure that we are front loading all of the work on ourselves or as the city, as opposed to putting that on the citizen itself. I literally just this past weekend was walking somebody through setting up a wallet, and it reinvigorated in me to make sure that this process is actually done really, really well, because people don't necessarily know, okay, I have dollars and I want to transition them into Bitcoin, but then I also have two different accounts, like an exchange account that I can do exchange rates on. And then I have my own personal wallet, which has a whole nother set of money. Like all these different investing concepts that are maybe common to me and you, Eric, are stuff that people don't necessarily deal with in their everyday lives because they haven't done any investing. So I want to abstract that away in order to give people a good sense of exactly what they're getting. And then when they get it, give them proper guidance in how they can leverage and use it at their own free will, of course, but to help them leverage and use it in the best way that they can. So if we're talking about, like, and we'll say an example, because we haven't set out any directives as to what we would do exactly. But let's say, for instance, that it was Bitcoin, right? You and me might clearly understand that the best thing to do with Bitcoin right now is just to hold it. Like, if you hold it, you're HODL. If you do that, you will be fine. But a person who's just getting into this may just like we saw in El Salvador, because I was just talking to a developer who was on the ground there, they had a lot of issues that they had not worked out when they did that airdrop, and people were just selling it because they needed food to eat, right? And that's reasonable. I don't blame those people for doing that. That makes a lot of sense, especially when you just got free money, essentially. I would immediately trade it so that I can go feed my family or do something kind of nice that for myself that I haven't been able to do before. But that's what we have to, that's the challenge. What are our expectations for people to have if the task is just to give free money? That's very easy to do. You just hand out money. But if the task is to actually have it benefit someone and have it, you know, help them start creating personal wealth, that's a whole other type of conversation that needs to happen. And you have to kind of set things in motion for them to clearly understand what the pathway to that actually ends up being. And if they make the decision not to do so, that's completely fine. But if they say they didn't do it because they didn't know, that's on us. That's a problem with how we did it and how we rolled out the program. If they didn't know the best way to go about doing that, when we could have easily settled it with an onboarding process or, you know, a very, very short video, like, hey, this is what you should do. Like very, very simple things. So when the mayor talks about a wallet, I'm 100% on board with that, because giving them access in that way at least primes them to say, this is an asset. This is what this looks like. And this is how we should leverage it and use it. Now, if we give out something that's supposed to be more so of a currency, like say, for instance, if we airdrop something like Miami Coin and how we've been talking about it, then I would expect it to be used for things that are social benefits for them in their everyday lives. And that's completely different. So then the dynamic shifts. So when we figure out exactly what it is that we're trying to distribute and give to everyone and make that much more clear for people, then I can speak more effectively to exactly what the plan will be, because that's going to be dictated upon what we decide to do moving forward for a specific coin or a specific asset.
You know, the visual I get right now as you're describing all this is that, you know, stereotypical chasm. You got, you know, two flat pieces of land and a big gap in the middle, and people on each side are trying to bridge this gap. And on one side, we could say that we have people, for lack of a better word, that are fluent with cryptocurrency, fluent with Bitcoin, fluent with wallets. And then on the other side, we have people who aren't, people that have never even heard about it, or I've heard about it, but have never actually dabbled and don't understand anything about it. And what I'm visualizing here is perhaps what El Salvador did was move fast, which is really important. It's important to move fast and to be out there. But maybe there was an underestimation about how big that gap actually was. And that's, you know, part of the experimental process. That's part of being first. And I'm sure that Miami Coin has a similar, you know, thing when it first launched. And now what I understand is that you're looking at how do you bridge that properly. And this is a segue. This is all just a big segue for me into the concept of DAOs. Because, you know, because when I think about, all right, how do we involve people in the most effective way in a Web3 context that helps them onboard, helps them build relationships, friendships, helps them get the right information that they might need, and the step-by-step guided hand-holding that's needed in order to do fill in the blank, whatever it happens to be, if it's an NFT buy or a digital signature or setting up a MetaMask or, you know, know, buying some tokens that do liquidity or using snapshot voting for the first time, whatever it happens to be, and doing team decisions. You know, we just elected 15 or 16? I forget. We just elected 15 council members in at the CityDAO to represent the community vote. So we just did an election process, right? Each of these council members had a chance to write a little short story, like a mini blog about themselves, 500,000 words. Everyone had a chance to speak in a community town hall meeting in front, like live in front of everyone. There's some Q&A that happened and a election process done on snapshot using the CityDAO NFTs to verify the voting. And we elected in, you know, who's going to represent our community from inside CityDAO. So in many ways, we're going through this electoral process that a real city would go through. And most of these people have never done this before. Some of them live in China. Some of them live in a communist regime. Have never had, you know, true governance rights over their land out in China, or too poor to own any sort of land and have governance over it. And these people from a communist regime or from any regime and from any geographical area now physically have voting rights over a piece of land in the United States of all places. And this concept of a DAO has helped onboard these people to be involved and to take these steps forward confidently. So now I wonder, and one of the big questions in my mind and with CityDAO as well, is where is the concept of a DAO sitting in, you know, Miami's discussion priorities, so to say? And what sort of, you know, maybe opportunities, challenges, pros and cons, where are DAOs at?
If I could give, it's in the research phase, right? We're still in R&D. And that's mainly because the concept of DAO, while that's not necessarily new to me, it is very, very extremely new to the city. And we have had community versions of DAOs, right, that have existed in the community for at least, I would say, anywhere between mostly six to nine months. Nine would be pushing it, but definitely 6 months at the bare minimum. And given that they have kind of established themselves to say, like, this is a DAO and this is how this operates, the question still always goes back to, like, Eric, what is actually a DAO? Like, what do DAOs do? And it kind of gets to a point where, like, DAOs can do almost anything you want them to do. And the conversation kind of goes a little bit off the rails, because there has not been a DAO that the city can point to say, this is exactly how we should run this DAO, right? And that's because DAOs have had their own agendas and things that they do. Like, for instance, I was recently looking at a DAO that had blue chip NFTs. I forgot exactly what the DAO was called, but they were talking about the process of liquidating all of the NFTs that existed within that DAO. And I was entranced by this process. I was like, okay, what are they going to do? Like, if they all decided to do it, is it just done? It's like, no, there's a multi-sig at the end. So to make sure that it stops for that. And understanding that process, like, was mind-blowing to me, because I'm starting to get a good understanding of what needs to be in place for the city. But then the other huge, like, that's just technically these things are probably going to be solved, like, within less than a month. Like, I'm pretty sure, you know, Eric, me and you might have some offline conversations, and then I'll circle back around. I'm like, I think I got it. Like, I think I figured out what model makes the most sense for the city to do and how we should execute it. The problem becomes convincing everybody else that this is a model that doesn't take power away from the traditional structure that exists in the city. That's the biggest problem, because it's an organization that exists to make decisions on something that the government, the local government, normally would make decisions on, even if it is new or free money, which I hate when people say free money. It's not really free money from anywhere, because it requires somebody to put faith and or risk into the situation in order to potentially either directly benefit the city or to know that they're going to help the city in a particular way and support them. So while, like, that whole concept and idea, while the city has wrapped its head around cryptocurrency in that way to various degrees, because the city might understand as an entity, but the community still has a lot of room of education, which is why education is a huge focus for me. Even though that's the case, there's still a huge chasm in the amount of people that know how to leverage a DAO to do what we're talking about right now. And our challenge, or at least my challenge particularly, is going to be, this is a DAO that works in the way that we want our city to operate and work with a DAO. So for instance, one big challenge of mine has been the way that we do disbursements, right? Disbursements come from city coins, because we can't personally hold any cryptocurrency at all. But a DAO could. A DAO could hold cryptocurrency, and a DAO can make rules as to how the city gets disbursements moving forward and split those disbursements in ways that invigorates the local tech and innovation ecosystem and continues to be a small line of dollars that were apart from the budget that had already been set out for the year, right, to the general funding pool. So DAOs create a really simple, in my mind, a simple solution for a problem that I know exists that we could definitely do. But the challenge starts to become, okay, Eric, structure, because this is me now, structuring the DAO to operate in that way and getting the right people around it to legitimize it so that it can actually be accepted in the way that I would like for it to be accepted in local government structure. So where it sits at in the local, so is one, where does it sit at in the local government structure? Two, getting everybody behind where it sits at and knowing that it's not going to take power away from the traditional structure, because if it does at all, then it's not going to go well. And then three, once that's established, setting up the process in which these things would be decided upon, because you set up an entire governance structure inside of the DAO, how does the city go about choosing representatives for a DAO when the DAO is supposed to be a representative of the city? Do the representatives that already exist just become the representatives of the DAO as well and they make decisions in that way? I'm not sure. Should they? I debate yes and no. Yes, because we've elected them, but also if we make decisions that may require more technical expertise in how we do certain things, that might be a requirement to be a representative. These are questions that I'm having right now in which I need to start to dive a little bit deeper into in order for us to be able to leverage this in a way that's going to be effective.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject because there's no roadmap. And, you know, I'm a part of a few DAOs. And, you know, if I just use a comparative example of CityDAO and Blockbuster DAO, for example, I'm fascinated with Blockbuster DAO and, you know, watching that whole thing develop. And so there's two different approaches that each CityDAO and Blockbuster DAO, as examples, represent. CityDAO took the approach of let's dive in hardcore, full steam, make stuff happen, be the first one in and figure the rest out as we go. And there's clear advantages to that. And it's brought us where we are. Then Blockbuster DAO comes at it from a different angle. They say, you know what? We're not doing any launch of anything. We're not expending any money at all. We're not going to have a treasury at all for a while. We're just going to build a community. And as a community, we're going to decide as a community what the priorities are, what the branding is, what the initiatives are, what the KPIs are, who's going to be in charge of what. And then after we have this structure established, then we'll do a raise. And then we'll go buy the Blockbuster brand and then go on from there. And so there's essentially, in my mind, there's kind of a top-down approach or a bottom-up approach. And I don't know which one's the right one or the wrong one. There's definitely a pros and cons to both. What I'm hearing from a city perspective is that there's certainly a whole different realm of liability that doesn't exist on a random community starting up, whatever that random community might be. And so one of the things I'm wondering about is, does it perhaps make sense that instead of coming from a top down, does it make sense to maybe open up a discussion form? And maybe it's called Miami DAO, and it's just a discussion form though. And there's no liability. There's nothing for sale. There's no securities. There's nothing. There's just, hey, who wants to be a part of something really cool? And what could those cool things be? And maybe you end up being the moderator of, you know, the initial moderator of that Discord channel and help, you know, find, because people that are in the early days of a DAO, in my mind, are like volunteer entrepreneurs. Not only do they not get paid for what they're doing, but they're working double, triple overtime for that zero compensation. They're doing it out of passion, raw, unbridled passion. And there's people that are passionate about Miami as a city. And I would speculate would love to have, I mean, I'm blessed to have the conversation with you like I am having right now. And there's other people that would love to be able to chat in any capacity with anyone in the city. And so I just, you know, maybe I'm going too far upon the realms that I should be, but I wonder about a Miami DAO Discord channel and what sort of just fundamental grassroots, just simple discussions might spring up from the citizens of Miami that maybe even answer some of the questions that you're wondering about.
Right. No, you make a really, really good point. So, I mean, there is something right now, funny enough, called Miami DAO. And I'm having conversations with them this week to determine if there are things that can be put in place to better align, right? Because I really like how you made the split between a top-down and a bottom-up approach where, you know, in my mind, it would be lovely to just take the city down route. We're just doing it. And it comes together because we're being proactive and people are galvanized around the energy that we have. That's how we've, you know, been effective as Venture Miami, because we kind of dive in head first and then we kind of back channel all of the things that need to happen after the fact. We've been rather effective at it even before I came, obviously before I came on. But I think with this one, because this has so many touch points into the traditional structure of the city that already exists, taking the blockbuster DAO approach is going to make 10 times more sense. So I want to look at the DAOs that exist in our community, which I believe that there are two right now. I know of one particularly, which is Miami DAO, which I'm having the conversation tomorrow. And once we have that conversation, is really understanding, okay, how do you guys align in the way that you are building up this DAO? And what things are you going to leave to later? And what things are you prioritizing now in terms of the involvement of the community? And where you start to align politicians to get involved in this process, because if they're not involved early enough, then it's just going to be a no-go, because they're going to feel like if you present something fully grown to their doorstep, I highly doubt that they're going to be all in on the idea. So there has to be some balance, maybe not, you know, completely unflushed, because, you know, I'm from startup world. So people doing things iteratively makes tons of sense to me, but everybody else is like, that needs to be much more polished than that. So, you know, having to balance that and say, okay, we got it to a state where this makes sense. This is going to be a framework for which we're going to use for moving forward. Then you can have a conversation with people in our commission or other local politicians that would be on board with trying to figure out what the governance structure should be for the DAO. And then, like you just said, later on, introduce the idea of a treasury, which we can just say doesn't have to have anything to do with the city's actual budget, can have everything to do with the Miami coin funds that have already been raised. So now we don't have to talk about doing any extensive form of fundraising, but also at the same time, it could be fundraised in that way because it's its own separate organization. But at the same time, one of the things that I like that the City DAO can leverage a little bit more is that DAOs have been recognized as an organization apart from organizations that exist traditionally. And I don't know where we stand at. Me being a lawyer and coming from a lawyer background, I don't know where we stand at legally in that gray area if we decided to do that in the exact same manner in Florida. I imagine we'd get in a little bit more trouble than I would like to admit at this moment right now. So that's something that I would also like to discover a little bit more deeply.
Yeah. And you probably heard about the Republic of the Marshall Islands doing the same thing as Wyoming and recognizing a DAO. We just had a chat with a company, Adam Miller, who's in charge of setting up DAOs in the Marshall Islands. And these legal questions, yeah, they exist broadly and they're not quite clear. In a way, you could say it's not really a big deal because it's just an expansion on existing bylaws and it's just a little tweak. But on the other side, you could say, well, no, it is a big deal when you have, you know, people in a communist regime in Russia, China that are owning what? What do they own? And how does that work? So it's a big question. So I'm just a community member with City DAO. I'm a citizen of City DAO. And as such, I like to have fun. And everyone in the community does little initiatives that they think are cool. And part of this for me is, of course, running the show and reaching out and having these conversations. I did something else too. You know, City DAO, we would love to work closer with politicians and work closer with real cities and have real discussions. We are literally making things up as we go. Now, there's powerful, intelligent, capable people in the community in abundance. That being said, there is a gap between City DAO and a real city right now. And there's a lot that I think we could learn. We would love to do that. As a little show of interest and gratitude, you could say, I have a little gift for you and the city of Miami here. It's a very small thing. It's a token thing. Maybe you don't like it. But, you know, when I looked at the domains registrations, I saw that, you know, Miami DAO was taken. So was MIA DAO was taken. But Miami Coin DAO was not taken. But that's just a time span. You don't know how long it's going to be until someone takes that domain. So I bought it. I own it. And I want to give it to you. You can do whatever you want with it. You can choose not to use it. You can, you know, just tuck it away. I don't want to hold it, to be honest. I don't want to have it forever. I bought it for the specific intention of giving. So yeah. I can transfer it to you after the show offline if, you know, then you can just hold it. And, you know, definitely City DAO would love to be helping and participating in any way that we can with some of the cool stuff that might come out of the concept of a DAO discussion. Because having a domain name and a Discord channel is a separate subject than having a corporate registration. And the discussions about a DAO can exist and start building the root system under the ground for 12 months before anything gets registered. And just strictly have it as a discussion channel for people in Miami and people in the blockchain and the DAO community to talk about and be a part of. So there's my little gift. I don't know if that's going to be, you know, well received or not. I'm on a thin branch here with this one, but there you go.
No, I think it's great. I think that's wonderful, right? I know for a fact that we are definitely going down that route. we are definitely wanting to do that. I will definitely see if we can leverage and use the domain name for sure. But I appreciate the sentiment, because we as a city are heading in that direction, and it's just, what is the structure, the infrastructure that we're going to build out to do that? And to me, DAOs make sense to do that, but we have to come with a lot of persuasive arguments as to why that's the structure and the manner in which we should go about doing things. Because I can already hear, how is a DAO different than what we're already doing right now? And it's like, well, so many different things. And in me understanding and doing that initial research and then finding your organization, well, not your organization, but the organization that you're a member of within that, it for me sparked a lot of, it resonated with me a lot. And what I want to do is continue to do that research so that I can better articulate why a DAO might be a better way to go than the non-existent structure that we have currently for operating and leveraging the funds that we're attaining from Miami Coin itself, because I do expect that Miami Coin will continue to generate more funds, and it will outstrip what I can imagine right now based on the utility and things that we're building it up to do. But when that starts to happen, how we deploy it is the next biggest thing. So once I get past utility, okay, how do I deploy the funds that we've accumulated as the city is the very next thing that is hugely on my mind to properly figure out and do. So I'm trying to be a step ahead and say, this is what our roadmap looks like. And it's fun because I get to look at it from a product perspective again. I get to be, okay, how do we build this product out to be effective? But instead of just focusing on it in the lens of a company, we're working as a city to do so. So I think my team is up to the task.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, when I think about what excited me about Bitcoin, and to me, the answer was it presented a potential solution to many of the global problems that I see today, specifically in third world countries where banking as a concept is foreign or corrupt or non-existent. And that's where I think the biggest benefits are. But even in first world countries, there's significant benefits that are also very, very clear. And that's fundamentally what got me interested into Bitcoin. Not the price, not the speculation, not the get rich quick. All that stuff is a side effect, and I would say a distraction from what the true purpose and goals are. And I think that a similar concept holds true in the concept of a DAO, specifically in CityDAO, exploring decentralized governance of a physical land. And now when I look at the, okay, well, what is it? What is CityDAO, or it's not CityDAO, what could a DAO present as a change or a solution to the concept of governance in humanity as a whole? Is it possible that our traditional political system at some point in the future, in an unknown time frame, becomes replaced with the concept of a DAO and NFTs, and every citizen has an NFT with voting rights and a bit of proof of humanity and one vote per person type of a situation? And if it does that threaten the position of existing politicians, or does it enhance the position of existing politicians? Clearly, it adds transparency and openness to the population. So I think that it bridges in a big way a gap between the political world and, let's say, the citizen real world, day-to-day world. But depending on the position and the mindset of a politician, they might feel like it's a threat or that it's an enhancement. Now, in CityDAO, we just, like I said, elected people to go into our council, which was in many ways representative of a micro election that you would see in any government. So you could say that there's actually no difference at all from what we just did versus what the existing political system does right now, other than it opened it up for everyone. And there's a lot of other little micro benefits. What do you think? Is there a non-zero chance? In other words, is the chance greater than 0% that a DAO concept replaces our existing political system as a country someday?
Man,
is it non-zero?
It's non-zero to me, but it's so far off. It's like a really far off idea, because and let me give the caveat: completely replaces, no, right? But replaces some levels, I think so. I think there's some places where the way that things are structured right now do not, just like how we're, it's the exact same conversation that we're having with fiat, where people are like, there is never going to be a day where the dollar is not the dollar, right? But the dollar hasn't always been the dollar. Like it just generally hasn't. And I don't want to go down that route in this conversation, because I think everybody, I'm preaching to the choir to this audience, but it's really important to understand that when we think about how people make decisions and how we structure representatives for ourselves, is this, you know, going to replace that in some respects? Yes, 100%. Because it still gives you the same through line to people to make decisions, but there's more transparency and there's more accountability when things are done in this particular way. And it potentially is a lot more efficient. Maybe not a potentially, it is a lot more efficient to do things in this particular way. So when we're thinking about it, I'm not going to go on a limb and say, the way that my local government does things now is so inefficient, we need a DAO right now. I'm not saying that at all. That is not what I'm advocating for. But I am saying that in the way that we're going to be making decisions moving forward and the changes and innovations that's going to start happening in our cities and the changes that our citizens want to see are going to start pushing us towards larger innovations that need to happen that sometimes are going to be iterative and then moving forward are going to be really, really dramatic and almost all at once to where you start to see entire countries leverage DAOs where they weren't going to do so before. So they're in a better position to experiment than maybe us as cities and states because they don't have this structure set up in this way. But if I would be remiss to say if we wouldn't see 2-3 years from now, a country saying, we're using a DAO for our governance structure now because we think that it's more transparent and equal for everyone. I'm not going to be surprised to see that at all, but I would be surprised to see it in America just because of how apprehensive we are to changing certain things. So if we see it in other countries and we see that it works, that like a country, and I don't want to call out any country in particular, but if there's a country that you would say is not as transparent and could potentially be a little bit more corrupt than you would like it to be, and a DAO was able to make it effectively transparent and give everybody NFT so you know exactly who voted and exactly who did what, I would be really remiss to say that that wouldn't catch fire after they saw it work a couple of times, right? Like after a couple of elections, you see that it just works out much, much better. And the greatest thing about a DAO is that it's not replacing people, it's replacing process and it's replacing structure. So people don't necessarily feel like they're out of a job anymore, or at least out of a job of the actual decision-making kind. So you don't replace a representative with a DAO. You make the process in which a representative is elected created by a DAO. And so the process that we have right now are faulty. People know that right now. If you look at how our election process has gone over the last couple of years, you would be remiss to say that huge portions of our society hasn't said, this is problematic. I don't like how this operates. I'm not sure that people are voting in the way that is truly transparent, right? And whether you agree with that or not, the fact that we're even able to make that argument is problematic, right? The fact that we even have to have that conversation is very, very problematic, even if it's all a lie. Even if everything is a lie, the fact that we have to say, I'm not sure if this process is as secure as it's supposed to be, that is a problematic statement. If we have a way to better that or to make it more secure, I think we should push for doing that. And yes, we need to take our time. And we've seen places where people have made like voting apps and they've gone to hell because people haven't set them up properly. I don't think that we should rush into it. But if we know that a solution is an effective fix for it, and innovation is the manner in which we're going to go about doing it moving forward, I think we should support that. And we shouldn't be surprised if it happens sooner rather than later.
Yeah, very interesting. And just as we wrap up here, I'm wondering, do you have a suggestion? Like, do you have a suggestion on what CityDAO should focus on next? You know, we're all open to input here and curious about your perspective. Is there something that you would be really curious to see CityDAO discuss and explore?
I think you already said it, working with cities, right? So, you know, it would be really interesting. One, I'm going to put the call out right now to anybody in the audience or yourself, Eric, to say, you know, if people want to ideate with me on the idea of DAOs, I'm more than happy to have that conversation on a Twitter, on a call, on I'm not in love with Discord channel, but I'm trying to get into it more and more.
I'm like just about to say we got to get you in our Discord chats, man.
I know, but I'm gonna, you know what, and I'm gonna overcome that because I need to have more Discord conversations than I'm having right now. I'm having plenty of Twitter conversations, but I need more Discord conversations. And I'm more than happy to have that conversation because I really think that the part that's missing is the actual government involvement in how do we fuse these two things together? Because I think in isolation, that you guys will figure the DAO part out. I don't think that that's going to be a problem at all. That just takes a little bit of time, continue to build a strong community. And when the community is in line with each other about what they want to do, like things will click like very, very easily. But now you have to say, okay, the community is clearly aligned on what it is. And you would think the community is everybody. So what else do we have to worry about? Well, the community also has to go with traditional institutions that have either priorities, some priorities that clearly align with all the citizens and some priorities that don't. So then another question starts to become, does the effective use of a DAO effectively push out what the traditional government was doing, which it can't, because a DAO, at least in this form now, I don't want to say that it never could, but in this form now, can't take over like public works. It can't say like, oh, we need to figure out what's going to happen with all the parks. It potentially could, but it's not that big of an entity to be able to handle that as of yet, right? So how do you integrate a DAO? What role does the DAO play with traditional governments and traditional systems so that you can figure out what the interplay is and where it fits? That's the next challenge for city DAOs to figure out. Because if you're able to say, city DAOs is going to do this within, without, or alongside the city, then you are taking a huge step in bringing it into the regular everyday lives of people who don't integrate themselves into this technology and this work every day. We're looking at DAOs, cryptocurrencies, new technologies every single day. Like I wake up and it's the first thing, I'm on Twitter and I'm like, what did I miss? Because I know that I missed something, or oh, I know that my portfolio looks a certain way. Let me look at that. That's me every single day. But that is like a very small minority. We are a very niche crowd still. Even though people know about us, we're very niche in the way that we take in information and do things. So how can we start to make city DAO and DAOs that are going to represent huge swaths of the community in a city work alongside traditional government entities to say, this is a role that I think we can take on now because we're more effective at it than the city might be. And the city shouldn't be threatened by it because we're complementary in this way, right? And then, you know, over time, if that starts to change, you guys can continue to expand on what the DAO is supposed to do that may fill out gaps that exist within the city, which, you know, if you talk to any citizens in any city, they will say that there are a lot of gaps. So there's room to definitely do things. It's just effectively figuring out what to do first. So that's my take.
It's really cool perspective. I appreciate your time a lot. Just as we wrap up, I wonder if there's any pressing subject on your mind you might want to just share as final thoughts here on the episode of the City DAO podcast, or if you spilled the beans already.
I spilled as much as I can right now. Just to repeat, this is the year of utility for us. The mayor has made that like my largest mandate to make sure that the utility is coming out of Miami Coin. So if you have utility ideas, I'm all up for hearing them. If you have a company or an organization who wants to give utility to Miami Coin that you think would be effective, I'm not choosing one over the other. I don't choose winners. We can't do that as the city anyway. We want as many effective use cases for Miami Coin as possible. So I'm open to whatever people have to suggest. And we're actively working on trying to at least make sure there are half a dozen done by the end of the year, at minimum three. But we're looking to get past that now. We're shaping up to do much more than that. So if more and more people want to continue to figure out ways to integrate themselves into use cases for Miami Coin, more than happy to, and definitely I'm open to talking about that subject.
Well, thank you, Eric, very much on behalf of everyone here at the CityDAO community. We appreciate your time. We also really hope that this isn't a one-off thing, that we get to have a lot more conversations moving forward. We'd love to get you on Discord and in on some of those chats. And we really like to work closer with physical cities, and anything that I can do to help bridge that gap and make that happen, I'm a servant to the community and just excited to be a part of all this. So thanks again for your time, and I really look forward to seeing you on Twitter, seeing you on Discord, and chatting again at some point in the future.
It sounds good. Send me the Discord link. I'll make sure I get on to that today. But
all right,
I'll see you guys on Twitter for sure.
Right on. Well, everyone listening, make it a great day. We'll see you next time on the City DAO podcast.